Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome, dear listener, to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Brands, and joined this week by Matt Knight.
I'm back, baby.
You are back indeed. Welcome back, Matt. How are you? How's the last fortnight been?
Has it really been that long?
It's been a fortnight. Have you been gallivanting around Europe?
Where have I been? I'm going to Belgium next week. I've been to Slovakia. Czech Republic,
lovely.
Vienna, so Austria. Realize that Vienna is not a country; it's a city. I've been across the UK, so yeah, it's been intense.
How about that?
But it's all good.
Checking out guitar shops, seeing fun things.
Oh, of course, a couple of guitar shops I've not been to before.
Oh, yeah, like what?
Klangfarber.
Klangfarber.
I don't know what that means, but it's in Austria, in Vienna, built into a building called the Gasometer, which was the original like gas storage for Vienna.
Right.
It's a really, really cool building, massive store. So that was really cool. It's going there. It's got like a really cool like boutique custom guitar room with some cool stuff in it. So that was quite cool. Where else did I go? What else did I see? Qatari.
In
Czech Republic. They have their own guitar festival usually.
Yeah.
But that's a really cool store, two floors. What I like about that is that you've got a second floor that is, there's like a brass section and some offices, but then there's also like a cafe area. And I just always really like that. Like they've got a vending machine you can help yourself and a coffee machine. I just think more music stores should be a combination of like a coffee shop and a music store and, I don't know,
makes it a bit more relaxed, doesn't it? I imagine if there was like a coffee shop or like, you know, something like that worked into it as well, I'd feel a bit more comfortable. You know, just hanging out there. Sometimes you can feel a little pressurized.
Yeah,
to do something when you're in a guitar shop.
I described an idea to Amy, and she was just like, "You've just described a shopping center." And I was like, "I have, but I was on a smaller scale." So let me explain. Maybe this is more of a UK thing. I don't know. I haven't really witnessed. No, I did go somewhere in America, but like you know, like you get those big. They're like food courts, but it's like loads of small individual restaurants. So you go in and it's one big food hall, and then on the outskirts it's all restaurants. There's one in Brighton as well. I can't remember what it's called. And I was like, we need something like that, which is like one big open hall, but then like one side's a guitar shop, and then there's a coffee shop, and then there's like you can go and buy records, and there's also a tattoo parlor, and then
yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like want to bring all of my favorite things together in one big hall.
Well, you should.
Because I was like, you know, I got a tattoo the other day. I was like, tattoo, I'll go and buy some records. I'll go and look at some guitars, you know. Maybe I want a coffee. All of my favorite things combined.
You want Matt Knight the shop. That's what you want.
Matt Knight the shop. Maybe that's what I should change my name to. Matt, you know, beer, you know, a nice barber's. Get the beard rocking. But alas, I have no money to start such a business, Joe.
Well, we'll see. We should go to the bank with this idea.
Laughing all the way to the bank. So, yes, I've been around quite a lot, but I'm back.
Did you see any remarkable guitars or rare pedals? You know, the shops are obviously great, but did you see anything that, you know, yes, really lit actually. A fire under your bum?
Guitar-wise, not so much, unless you want to talk about, like, five-string sparkly Dingwall with fan frets. I was like,
for goodness sake.
That's the kind of bass I would play.
This is not the podcast for that sort of an instrument.
But I did see... So in Qatari, so if you are based in or around Prague and you want to buy this, they had a 65 Fender Bandmaster with matching 6x12. I mean, it was just like, yeah, that thing's going to sound awesome.
6x12.
Because I was like, oh, that can't be a 610 because it was too wide for a 610. And I was just like, yeah, so it's like a 65. And they had a 60, they also had a 64 Bandmaster with matching 212. So
how much was the Bandmaster with the 612?
It was about 6,000 euros. No, I don't think it was that much at all. It was about 3,000 euros, maybe.
That's not too bad.
It's difficult because Czech crowns.
Yeah.
That you look at the number and you're like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I always
don't know how it relates.
It's like, nice. I like how cheap it is over there to get a beer and to, you know, get a meal and stuff. It's definitely a fantastic place to party. But yeah, they'll accept euros. Everywhere accepts euros in Prague anyway. But yeah, I guess if the pricing is written in that.
Yeah. So that was cool. Yeah, I saw that. Didn't really see anything like exceptional guitar-wise, I would say. But yeah, that was definitely something that stood out to me. And also, I can't remember the name of it. See if I can Google it. But they had an amp from Mad Professor. Obviously, you'll know Mad Professor from the pedal brand. But they also make amplifiers as well. And they had basically... as I've always described, my kind of dream amp, which is one control. I'll see if I can find it. I don't even know if they even make it anymore. They probably don't. They don't. It was, so it must be discontinued, but it was basically a Mad Professor amp with one control. Basically just had a volume. That was it. And I can't remember what it was called. I'm sure if I went to the Qatari website, I could probably find it. But yeah, they had some cool secondhand stuff. I think that's, I guess for me and you, Joe, whenever we go to guitar stores, and we go to a lot of guitar stores, you start to see the same thing because most
the shine big really shops, rubs off, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, most big shops all stock the same stuff. So unless they're really known for like, I guess, like really high-end custom shops or things like that, you tend to see the same models everywhere because they are the most common models. Yeah. So secondhand tends to be where you find a lot of the kind of gems, I guess you would say.
Absolutely. Unless you're really set on something, just the way that I guess online shopping is these days. You know, unless you're really set on something, then you've seen everything you want to on the internet. I know you can go and play it in the shops. I understand that. But it's, you know, what really gets you excited is when you see something that you've never seen before. And that tends to be something very custom, so very expensive, or, you know, old, weird. I love guitar shops for just being, you know, really weird. You know, I was a couple of weekends ago. Actually, whilst Nam was on, I went to Rye on a little weekend break with my partner Emma for her birthday. And we were walking around Rye and there was this little guitar shop and Emma was like, oh, do you want to go in? You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know what? I will. I'll go in. We'll have a look. And it had like a sign saying, like, we're still open sort of thing on the front. I was like, I went in and there was, you would immediately at the counter and there was like...
Right.
Maybe 15 guitars in the whole place, and the place was full of cardboard boxes. He was like unpacking stuff, but it was just, you couldn't move around in there. So my choice was just to stand there or to leave. And I didn't want to just turn around and leave after I've just walked in the door. So I like bought a set of strings and some plectrums, neither of which I needed. Just because I felt so bad. I didn't just want to turn around. And the guy did not give a shit that I was in that shop. I tried to have a conversation. He had like a baritone Dan Electro Longhorn next to the counter. And I was like, in Silverburst. And I sort of was like, you know, talking about that, how glad I am that Dan Electro brought it back. He didn't care. He did not want to have a conversation with
me. He was like, yeah, no, he's like, it's an original, mate. I didn't even know they discontinued how they hear so long. I think this is always the thing that I think in the UK, like in America, certainly, and certainly from times I've been in Japan, they do have a bit more of that like pawn shop culture.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that here.
Ugh, I hate that we don't have it.
You know, and I think that's, yeah, it sucks. But basically, you just don't really find anything like that. Used to, like back in our younger days, you know, before the kind of internet and that. But
the first guitar shop I worked in was purely sort of weird secondhand stuff, you know, and it was full of just random things, mostly from the late 70s and 80s that you'd never heard of.
Mm.
You know, like solid state Marshall amps and stuff like that, you know.
Well, I did play a bit of one guitar, actually. But more work-related, but we've got a person who works for us now who used to own and run Vintage and Rare. We went and did something the other day, and I was like, oh, can you bring a guitar? And he bought his 62 Strat. He was like, oh, it's, you know, my 62 Strat. And I was like, oh, yeah, just casually. And he drove to where we needed to go, and it was just on the back seat, no case.
Oh,
just like leaning up. He was like, I probably should get a case for it, really. And I was like, well, you know, it's already got a fair few dings in it, you know. It's quite cool though. It's a 62 body with a 65 neck,
right,
refinned in black with matching headstock.
Oh, that's cool. I can get behind that. With the what, parchment guard?
Yeah, with like a parchment guard.
Yeah, very nice.
It's wicked. Very, very
lovely.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I did get to see that. So I have tried some good stuff. And I think when we maybe in the Patreon, I'll talk about some other cool guitars.
Yes.
Did try one other cool guitar, but maybe we'll save that for later.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. Well, dear listener, this is episode 6 in season 5. And the title of this episode is Our Favorite Boutique Pedal Builders. Obviously, our list of favorite boutique pedal builders is, you know, it is as long as two arms, so we're not possibly going to get through all of those, and we don't just want to, you know, quick mention 80 brands on this, and so we're not even going to be particular. We're going to miss out some of our favorites. We're going to probably talk about 2-3, you know, brands each that we really like at some point, and just talk around some of those things in case you've missed them. Some of them will be more obvious, and we'll just be talking about how much we love them and what great pedals they are. But some of them might be new to you. We'll see. But we will get to that, because before we do that, I finally got round, Matt, to starting to list, starting to photograph and list all my stuff. It's happening.
Have you done a little spreadsheet? Have you worked out how much money you're going to bank into something else?
I'm just doing bit by bit. So there's around 18 grand's worth of stuff that I'm listing. First of all,
Is that top end estimate or low end estimate?
I think like it's something like, including inevitable reverb offers, I think it's something like 15 to 20 is the is what this the range.
All going on crypto.
But yeah,
Dogecoin is coming up, I'm telling you.
But I've started to put things together, started to get a few things together. Slow start today, because I've got to clean up, restring a lot of things. Some things need a little work because, of course, I've got so much stuff that just sits idle for so long. So I had I listed my fretless. My only current fretless is going on sale at the moment. It's just an old 2012 Mexican standard jazz bass that I had defretted, Aguilar 60s passive pickups in it and a Babix bridge, so that it's, you know, you want a really proper bridge when when it's a fretless, so that you can really get the minutia of of intonation going on.
And then you put vibrato all over it, and then puts it out of tune. So how much are you putting this together for? Are you selling all this stuff for logical reasons, Joe, or is this you need to buy something else?
No. This is all going towards my house deposit. But I'm selling a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to keep a few really great things. I'm sure I'll gradually build back up, but you know, I'm at maximum. I'm selling 6 different jazz basses, and that will still leave me with 3 or 4 jazz basses. So it's fine, you know.
How many instruments do you actually have, Joe? Do you know?
I don't know. It's over 30. So it's not like massive by guitar collector's standard.
Yeah.
I'm sure plenty of our listeners have far, far more than that. And also, a lot of my stuff isn't actually that nice. Like, I'm one of those people that I love a punt. I love taking like a 300 to 500 quid punt. And so I have lots of bang average guitars, rather than, you know, people who save up and spend good money on getting something.
I think that's why the guitar market has expanded so much, though, because I think there's so many great guitars in the mid price point, but I also think people are happy to take a punt on 300 to 500,
right? Yeah.
And sort of just go, oh, I haven't really invested in it, and if I don't like it, I'll just put it in the corner.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh, I spent $2,000 on this, so I need to play it. And I'm the same. Like, I would struggle. I look at a lot of guitars, as we all do, and through this podcast, and I just go, could I honestly really commit $3,000 to a guitar, $4,000 to a guitar?
You own a Nick Huber and I'm saying Music Man.
Now could I commit?
Oh, right.
But actually, I don't think I've ever spent... No, the most I ever spent on a guitar was my 58 Les Paul
the pink one.
And yeah, I'd say that I'd probably maybe... I mean, obviously, I sold that and then bought the Huber, but I don't know. I don't know. It's just I struggle now, like in the position I'm in now, going, would I spend $3,500 on a guitar when there are other great guitars, as we speak about a lot, for a lot less money?
Yeah.
I'd much rather buy 2 500 quid guitars and enjoy them for a bit and maybe mod them and mess around with them than spend $4,000 on a guitar that I'm sort of like, that's a lot to be happy with everything because you've spent so much money on it in one go.
Yeah, I understand that. I think the thing that always comes in when we're talking about like super high price guitars is, I know when I bought my 1969 Precision Bass that I don't gig it. You know, I gigged it once, and it feels like I don't get the best out of it because of that. And I don't want to gig it because I don't trust it. Because it's a vintage guitar and they're a little bit, you know, they're not 100%. But also, I kind of feel like I probably wouldn't want to take that on tour. Like the situations we get into on tour, you know, the places that we park up our stuff. I mean, our van is very secure, but you know, there's all of those things. And I just think also, like, I sometimes play drunk. I sometimes throw my guitar at the end of a show. I mean, I normally throw my guitar at the end of a show. I don't want to be doing that with something that's like $2,000 plus. I'm happy doing that with, you know, like £500 to £700 instrument.
Yeah. And I just think you can get just as much. I don't think you get any extra joy out of spending that much money on a guitar necessarily.
I don't know.
But then again, I haven't actually bought a new guitar. You bought my last guitar, Joe, and that was secondhand. So I haven't actually bought really another guitar for quite some time. And I was unboxing everything here. And I was like, I've probably got, most of my guitars aren't worth that much money.
No, because you've got your Baja Telecaster, which has been super modded a billion times. Have you still got the SG?
Yeah, also
modded.
I mean,
that had a Bigsby on it for a while. You've changed the pickups in that a couple of times. That was one of the faded, which are still, I think, some of the best value Gibson guitars you can get, that old faded series. They age so lovely and lovelily and so quickly as well. So you can get some really cool ones. And great modding platforms by Gibson, like super playable, and unfortunately for you, Matt, really haven't held their value at all.
No, I think, and this is the thing, it's like expensive stuff is just even more expensive now. You know, top end Gibsons are just, you know, they, well, I mean, we've talked about it before, but custom shops used to kind of top out at like 3.7, and that's where they start.
Yeah, that's where they start. I absolutely wouldn't buy a custom shop now. The price of a custom shop now has gone further than what I think a custom shop is worth. I just wouldn't be willing to part with. It's part of the reason why, because I've got, you know, at my my 40th birthday later in the year, it's why I went to Rigby Music in Manchester, who do a like a Fender style custom builds for great prices. Like, you know, my the one I've ordered is well under $2,000, and you know, I've had essentially access to the full range of custom options that you get from the Fender custom shop, just without Fender on the headstock.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I mean, we talk about Trent, we talk about things like that. I just think amazing for the money. Just quickly though, Gibson SG Special Faded 2008 Warm Brown, exactly the same as mine, £750.
Really?
On Reverb, oh, which I is basically about what they were, quid. Which is, I think, is more money than they were new.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But a great guitar, absolutely awesome guitar. But yeah, I'm also on the selling, sort of tip at the moment. I've got loads of stuff that I've just gone, I just don't need it, I don't use it, I've got bills to pay, you know, I had to keep my cat alive. So
why have you got bills to pay?
Bills to pay? I've got always loads of Joe, terrible. I should have looked at you when you said that and then I would have but that's where I would have been great if I could have taken a wig off. But no, this is a full full head of hair.
For now.
But yeah, I've just got to get round to it. I've just got to get round to it. But Reverb does make it easy.
It does. It does indeed. Yes.
So there we go.
Yeah, we'll see. I've got so much. Two Helixes. I don't know why I've got two Helixes. It's because I lent one to a friend and couldn't get it back, and I really wanted one, so I just bought another
one. And then they were like, oh, you can have it back now.
Yeah, literally within like a week of when I bought the other one. It's very annoying.
That's so funny. But
oh, well, it doesn't matter. Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labour-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to. Anyway, yeah. let's move on. I want to do this week's sound sample. A pedal that I bought a few weeks ago and haven't really got round to talking about that much and demoing on the podcast is the Thorpe FX Camo Flange. It's this wonderful pedal, dear listener. The gorgeous, lovely, lovely Thorpe. Oh, sorry, that's if you're watching, I just held it up, dear listener. wicked. So the Camo Flange is Thorpe FX Flanger, but as with all Thorpe FX modulation, it's just so much more. It's really unique for a flanger because you're given like a harmonics and a manual control. So that's kind of the manual is like the peak, I guess, of the LFO, and then the harmonic, I have no idea what these controls do, but it kind of shifts. It shifts basically the tonality and the abruptness of the phasing of the flanger. And then you have depth and rate, obviously pretty standard. A blend control, which is super handy, especially if you're using this with bass, as I do a lot, being able to make it more subtle, but keeping, you know, maybe a a more aggressive sweep. That's really useful. And then a treble control as well, which is kind of nice when you're using it on guitar for making it really The Cure-like. That's really Joy Division-y sort of thing. You can make it really toppy and lovely. And also having like a wet dry out on it is very, very useful. Not something that I ever use because I'm never running anything, any wet dry or stereo mixes or anything like that. So so it was fine absolutely as it is.
It's very much based off a Electric Mistress. That's kind of like its starting point. You know, it's one of, you know, Dan Steinhardt from the Gig Rig pedal shows always, you know, raves about it. And I know from very early on, and they've done videos on it, that that's what it was kind of really based on. But yeah, basically the delay, just so you know, the manual is like the delay time. So a lot of the time when you had a manual control on the old Deluxe Electric Mistress, you could like freeze the fat flanger and then it would like manually set the delay time, because effectively a flanger is like a delay. It's originally two tapes and, you know, you're just slowing one of them down and that's where you get that flange control. The Harmonix is like the one of the newer controls compared to some of the other things that it's based on. And I think that's more around the kind of feedback.
Right.
So, again, sort of delay and feedback are things that you get on a delay pedal, but that is forms the same basis of what also makes a flanger or a chorus, for example. So you can actually get it to like self-oscillate and do some sort of crazy, crazy stuff. But it basically goes from even harmonics or odd harmonics, and that sort of creates different sort of complexities within the actual pedal itself. And then treble obviously allows you to kind of do the upper mid-range and treble emphasis. But I like the fact that you do have stereo on there, so you can run it wet dry, which I think is quite cool.
Great for guitar and great for getting like a broader, wider sound. But I found just between the manual and the harmonic control, and I guess including the rate control in this, it was capable of doing sort of what I would think of as relatively traditional flanger sounds, but you could also get great chorus style sounds. I know if you want to watch a detailed review of this, dear listener, then Jackson Brooksby has done a fantastic video on the Camera Flange. It was, in fact, his video that I watched that made me buy this pedal. So yeah, go watch that. It's great. And he's talking about how the Camera Flange, a flanger, is actually the best chorus pedal he's ever heard, you know, and it does some great chorus sounds.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's always the common misconception for, Andy Summers from The Police, you know, and Walking on the Moon and chorus pedal at Slaughter's. It was
or The
flanger.
Cure. Or The Cure. The Cure are like chorus, the band, and it's most of the time it's a flanger.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So, it's because, again, they're very, very similar. They are very, very similar. There are differences, of course, but they are very similar in how that effect is actually created.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing, actually, I found, that a chorus always tends to sound like a chorus, but you can get a flanger to sound like both.
Yes, exactly. And I actually found at the extreme end of this, you could get some real sort of like rotary and like vibrato style sounds as well. You know, maybe not with the versatility that you get from a dedicated pedal for that sort of thing, but really very, very good. In fact, in the sound sample that we use, I got some more rotary style vibrato sounds for like one of the lead lines. But yeah, really, really great pedal. I'll play a little sound sample. Now, there's something like I think there's two lead guitars doing something slightly different. A guitar doing picked chords. Two lead guitars have a more vibrato sound. The picked chords is a more traditional flanger. And then there's a bass as well, which has a very light amount of the blend of the pedal, which just thickens it, makes it all a bit wider, a bit more, a little bit more substantial. Now, I spoke about this last week on the podcast, and I have realized that, Matt, when you and I listen to this, the call sums it to mono, so you won't get to hear all the lovely stereo-ness of this, unfortunately. But you, dear listener, do get the advantage of a stereo version of this track. So here it is. There you go, dear listener and Matt. The floppy FX camouflage. Yeah, it's so good. It's such a versatile tool. I kind of think of it like an all-in-one modulation box. You know, something if you were in the studio, you just had this to provide all your modulation, it will kind of do a bit of everything. And just with some real subtle tweaking, you can get just such a broad range of tones from it. I think it's a really fantastic pedal.
Mm. Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And again, just another sort of home run from Thorpey.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a pedal that he made a while ago that's been out for a fair bit.
It's been out for 4 or 5 years now, I'd say at least.
Just really passed me by, I guess, when it came out. Maybe
there's
just
too much stuff coming out, Joe. That's the problem. Yeah. There's just too many great things out there in the big wide world, so.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see. We might talk a little bit about Thorpey again later. I don't know. Is he in our list? Yes.
Sort of related.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see if we come back to that. Now, before we do move on to talk about our favourite boutique pedal builders, Matt, you've had some hands-on time with Rabir's signature model, is that right?
I have, yes. So alongside trying some cool stuff in stores, I did get to spend some time with our wonderful friend Rabir. I don't know if you've actually had a go on this as well, Joe, but yeah, I had a bit of hands-on time with Rabir's new signature. I think it is basically a Sabre model that is modified to his sort of taste.
Yeah, so he told me he's got like a big baseball bat neck on there.
Yeah, it's
because
like
he thought all music men have really thin, skinny necks.
Yeah, it's a massive neck. It's also, he actually gave me, and I played both the prototype and the modern one.
Oh, cool.
The kind of production one. And the production one's got a wider neck on it, and it's just awesome. I mean, just in terms of looks, in terms of finish, in terms of play. I mean, I knew it was going to be a great playing guitar, and you know, we were sort of talking about Music Man. I said, look, they are, in my opinion, I think they are the best guitars. I think they're the best made. I think they've got the most attention to detail. I think they...
God, I wish they made a bass that I liked.
The Joe Dart. One, you know.
I hate that, man.
Single pick. It's just, you know, awesome. So yeah, got a lot of time to play that. And it's really interesting because he was also talking about the carve on like the neck heel.
Oh yeah,
again between the prototype and the one that came out, and just shaving a bit off to make like a difference. The fact that it's got his bare knuckles in it, which obviously he's had a long time developing with bare knuckle.
That alone must push the price of the guitar up a lot. Putting proper bare knuckles in it.
It isn't available for sale anywhere yet. But I guess they haven't been made yet, so I think there's probably orders but not actually listed on any sort of dealer website yet. Right. But yeah, two colors I think we talked about before. They both look amazing. The Frenzied Flame is direct only. That's the maple board. I did play both. I actually preferred the
Ebony. Is it
board
on their website?
It is on their website under new NAMM 2024. I think we talked about it when we talked about NAMM.
We did talk about it. I just didn't look it up.
A few weeks ago.
At the time.
But yeah, just Rabir obviously knows guitars. He's a great player. He played me a bunch of his sort of new band stuff as well, which was recorded a lot on these.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Isotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then Isotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. Isotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the Isotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
And he just knows how to dial in a guitar. But he's sort of done it in a way that's great for his taste, but also not so unique that no one else would actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it's not a guitar just for him. It's just a great playing guitar. And it's suited to not only like heavy stuff, but also really clean stuff. I mean, if I was buying another Music Man, if I could justify the money for one of these, then I absolutely would. For me, best guitar I've played in a long time, hands wow. down. And obviously I love Music Man, but absolutely amazing. So fingers crossed, there's a Sterling version of this at some point, and it's not loads of money, and it's basically as good as this.
Ah, wow, it took me ages to find this link on their website. It was right at the top, I realize that now. I've only just seen them. The maple board looks fantastic. What a great guitar. And I see what you mean about the contours, both on the lower bout and on the arm contour as well.
Gear of the year. I just think it's great. I just think it's a great guitar. Right. So well designed. And it just played amazing. You'd expect that from Music Man anyway, but I think the small details that Rabir has done, like I said, the kind of the neck, the profile of the neck, the way it's contoured on both the body and the heel, and then putting his pickups in and stuff, I just think it's great. And the fact that you can do split coil, the fact that you can, I can't remember exactly, but I think you can split it, but it's a five-way switch, and the split doesn't work in certain positions. Right. So you can switch between humbucker and single coil basically via the switch as well as the push-push. So it's really versatile in the way it's set up for playing live as well.
Oh, that's
really cool. So yeah, just all those like small touches has just made it amazing, really.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see, obviously with a lot of signatures over the years, they do like Ball Family Reserve and they do like crazy tops and stuff like that. So it'd be interesting to see if
amazing anything. Ruby is going to be a part of that sort of, you know, legacy.
I know. It's amazing. I said to him, I was like, I think you picked the best company. Just awesome. In my opinion, they're just the best guitars. 100%. Yeah. They're just best guitars. So look forward to, I look forward to sort of seeing more of them. And again, hopefully at one point there'll be like a Sabre. There'll be a Sterling version as well. I think he sort of talked about it and maybe hinted about it at NAMM. It'd be cool to see if that ever happens.
Yeah, wicked. We will wait and see. It is exciting.
Exciting for Rabir. Good
yes.
for him. I'm very jealous. But it's a great guitar. And if you're thinking about a new guitar, not only if you like Rabir, but if you want your first Music Man, then I would highly recommend one of these. They are awesome.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Now let's move on to our main subject, our favorite boutique pedal builders. We're just going to kind of discuss a few brands that have really stood out to us in this. You know what inspired this? I was on Joe's Pedals.
Do
you have a shop on Joe's Pedals?
I do. I know. I spoke to Joe a few times. Really. Yeah. Nice guy, great pedals. Gets a lot of cool stuff in secondhand.
Yeah, he gets great stuff in secondhand. It's a British pedal retailer, dear listener. So if you're outside, sorry. But do check it out, joespedals.com. There's so much stuff on there. But what I love is I can just flick through and I'll see 20 brands that I have never, ever heard of. most of them with the most appalling websites, you know, when you actually track that brand down. He's just great for getting in super niche things, like real like one man pedal builders,
yeah,
who are great at building pedals and terrible at using the internet, but it's always interesting to find cool new stuff there. And it got me kind of thinking about some of the brands. Well, the thing that I discovered actually from there, so I'll start with the one that's totally new, because the other brands I want to talk about, you know, we have a relationship with friends with them, and I love their gear because of that. But the one that was new for me was a company called Blue Colander from Poland.
Colander is in Colander is in the thing that you drain your pasta with.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got a space on my pedal board at the moment. There's a gap.
That's what
there's
you all
a
do. Space.
Yeah, exactly. So there's one thing, and I was like, I don't especially need anything there, but I was like, what could I use? And I was thinking, I was like, oh, maybe I'll get like a you know, a bass voice Big Muff. And the problem is that actually when it comes down to it, a bass voice Big Muff isn't different enough from overdrive. Like a bass is an ensemble instrument. So if I'm driven, I'm probably backing something up. It's not your main thing. So there's not enough of a difference between those two in the context of my band. So I was like, oh, what, you know, what is it that I don't like? What frequencies would I like to be there for something crazy? And I was like, well, it's a rap. You know, it's that, it's a rat style sound, but for bass, obviously you're going to want to either run that rat with some form of blend pedal separate. And I only have one space, not two. So I can't do that. So I was like, well, I need a rat maybe that's voiced for bass. And I think I literally just typed that in to Google to see what came up. And one of the first things that came up was just a video on the Wetter Bass, which is a YouTube channel. And the fella on the Wetter Bass was playing one of these Blue Colander Tremond distortion and overdrive pedals, which got me checking out the Tremond, which I found in the UK on Joe's Pedals after that. And it's kind of this cool, it comes in a couple of finishes, actually. They do it in this gorgeous sort of metal flake, like Hammerite brown, but they do it in the proper rat style, you know, simple sort of gray black finish with bold white writing on it. And it has, it, controls wise, you've got a tone, you've got a master volume, you've got distortion, but then you have a clipping mode, which you can turn off, have asymmetric or symmetrical. You have a boost for a low pass frequencies, and you have a blend as well. So it's in, it's brilliant for bass. It's not marketed solely as a bass pedal. It's actually great. You know, it's just supposed to be a rat that can offer you bigger, broader sounds. And you can also dial in a bunch of low end as well, via the LPF boost. It's just a really, really cool pedal and is very affordable, like €179 direct off of their website, which really isn't too bad. It sounded absolutely fantastic. All the stuff that you want from a rat style distortion, but more, thicker, fuller, and the amount of different tonal demonstrations on the Wetter Bass channel. It was just, there were so many options for it. I really loved it. And that got me checking out Blue Colander. They have on their website, which is a big cartel shop essentially, and they have a massive range of pedals, a surprisingly substantial range
for a company. You know, no offense to them, if they're listening to this, they might be listening to, I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard of this brand before.
No,
but they do a range of stuff in, like, obviously there's a lot of fuzzes, a lot of distortions, but they've got some stuff in the real old school boxes, you know, like the old Tone Bender boxes as well, which is quite cool.
Yeah, they do some proper sort of Tone Bender style pedals, which, you know, they are a chunk. They do like a Mark I Supreme Tone Bender for €390. It looks very good indeed in that proper lovely old angled chassis.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's a real broad range of stuff. They've got the Sun Model T style preamp in the Quaalude, which is great. And yeah, loads of like good muff clones, you know, Black Russian style clones as well. It's very sort of fuzz oriented, but they all look absolutely fantastic. Love the look of their fuzz sustainer as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think certainly if you're after, they've got a lot of Tonebender sort of, I don't know if I want to use the word copies, but Tonebenders, Zonk machines, those kind of things in those old enclosures, kind of built in a very similar way to the fact that everything's built on a very small sort of turret board and it's point to point, you know, and there's just not a lot of components in there. So certainly if you want to go old school, and of course they just vary so much because of the different components. So definitely if you're a fuzz collector, this is a brand that probably should check out, because I'm sure a lot of people probably haven't. I was just going to have a look and see. Yeah, basically Joe's Pedals is the only dealer in the UK. They've got a dealer in Australia, Portugal, Singapore, Switzerland, and the UK.
Right, well.
And that's it for now.
Yeah, well, it all looks absolutely fantastic. I think I'm definitely going to get something. Like, the Tremend is the most sensible one for me to pick up, but some of the other stuff just certainly looks more fun.
Certainly for bass.
Yeah, yeah.
For bass, exactly. Probably. Makes,
that's the problem. Fuzz is always going to have some issues for bass. Got unless you have something voiced.
They've got a cool Instagram as well, where they've got some cool stuff, like shots of the circuit boards and stuff, and they use some... what looks like some very high quality, awesome looking components as well. So, thanks for introducing it, Joe.
There you go. There you go. What an incredibly cool brand. Okay, but that's my first one. Blue Colander. There you go. Nice to introduce something new to you, Matt. And surprising, you know, I expect you to know everything.
Oh, you know, I wish. Just the world moves too quickly now to try and keep up with everything. But I also think it leaves some things behind, and that's why I'm going to talk about this brand, which, you know, they put on their website as the original boutique pedal brand, and I would tend to agree. I think this is one of the first brands that I got introduced to, outside of your sort of Boss pedals, etc., and that's Zvex. And I just...
wow.
Do you know, I love Zvex pedals, and I have ever since I've sort of first got introduced to one. You know, I'm thinking... I think John Frusciante had a Fuzz Factory on his pedal board at one point.
Yeah.
Obviously, like Matt Bellamy from Muse. Loads of people were talking about the Fuzz Factory. That was the kind of game changer. That was the gateway for so many people.
Yeah.
Not only to try boutique pedals, but also try something very different. And I think it opened the door for many other people to make pedals and go outside of the box or outside of the norms. And there was a great mini documentary from Chase Bliss about the Fuzz Factory, right, with Zachary Vex when they did the Bliss Factory. And he was saying that he was basically, I think he made like a Fuzz Face clone, and then he was up really late and someone was like, no, it needs to be different. And he like just wired in those two extra controls, and that's where it could kind of like oscillate and do all the kind of crazy pitch stuff and the Velcro stuff. And he took that into the store and they were like, oh, this is great. We'll put it on sale. And if I remember right, I think it was someone like played for some band. I'm sure he played for like Shania Twain or something. It wasn't that. I can't remember. But it was like he was a guitar player for another artist who you wouldn't really think. And then was just like, oh, this is awesome. Then like ordered another one. And then all of a sudden it like, I think he did an interview and he was like, oh, I love this pedal. And then basically everyone went crazy for it. And then that sort of spurred on the rest of the brand. And the reason I'm talking about it is because I don't think we talk about Zvex enough, because I don't think they've actually launched a new pedal for a very long time. You know, obviously Fuzz Factory was always really popular. And then quite a few years ago, they bought in their Vector series. So they were mass produced in another country and then assembled in America rather than being hand wired in America. They did variations of the Fuzz Factory. They had the small pedals like the Fuzzalo, but I don't think they've done anything new for quite some time, and you see less of them about, but they are still a brand that exists and make great pedals. And I've owned lots of them. And I always just remember they were the brand that was there early on, before your JHS, before your Earthquaker.
Yeah.
That had like videos in 360p, and you'd like watch a video of the Johnny Octave and you'd be like, oh my God, this thing's amazing. Or
I didn't even, you know, really, I've not given them solid time to actually think about them until you've mentioned this. But I remember being in GAC when we used to get like the woolly mammoths in, which was, you know, obviously quite good for base. And we had the Fat Fuzz Factory as well, which was great. And I remember those coming in and us being like, oh my God, like look at the graphics on them. These cool, and it was nothing. There was nothing like that. These looked like they were made in a shed. And there was just no, brands hadn't done that yet. Like boutique pedals didn't exist. This hadn't happened. It wasn't that long ago and this hadn't happened. And how excited we were whenever a ZVEX pedal came in. And also how expensive we thought they were, even though they've always been sub 200 quid. But I guess, you know.
I think, you know, they've got some great stuff. And I would say a couple that I've owned, I think are really worth owning. And I would definitely buy again. The first one is the Super Duper 2-in-1. So that's two of their super hard-on circuits.
Isn't that just a boost, the hard-on?
It is. So, but the Super Duper 2-in-1, they cascade into one another. And one's got a master volume. So the second one has got a master volume. So you can control the overall output of the pedal. And then one goes into two. So you're sort of... It's a big clean boost going into another boost, which you can also then drive really hard, but you can keep the volume down, but you can turn them on and off independently.
Oh, that's very cool.
And then the other one, which I've also owned and I regret selling, this was a wicked pedal, but it's the J Maskus Signature. It's the double rock. And that was basically two box of rocks pedals, which is a kind of like a Marshall in a box type thing. But the good thing is that on each one, you can turn them on and off individually, but you can also have three levels of subs control, which adds in extra bottom end. And you can switch between distortion or boost. So it's kind of got the hard-on circuit in there as well. Uh-huh. So you can run it like a Super Duper 2-in-1. You can run it like a boost into a drive. You can run a drive into a boost. So you can set it up in lots of different ways. They do a Vector version of it now, or have done for some time, which is about $250. Yeah, but they've discontinued a couple of the real old school ones like the Seek Trem. They make a Super Seek Trem now, but you know, back in the early days when they were doing things like that, I think they still make the Lo-Fi Loop Junkie, which I always wanted but could never justify the cost. But it is basically a super low fidelity 20-second looper that can only have one loop. You can't overdub or anything.
Right.
But it basically just made everything sound super cool and lo-fi. And I was just like, oh, it's just wicked. But yeah, brand, we haven't really seen much from for quite some time. But
Do you ever play the Fuzz Probe much?
No. I didn't own one at one point.
How did the Fuzz Probe work?
magic. No, there was two. There was the Trem Probe, which is a volume pedal, basically, Wah Probe and Fuzz Probe. And it had a metal conductive plate. It worked in the same way, I guess, like a theremin worked. And on the Wah Probe, it controlled filter. On the... I can't remember what it controlled. I think it might have controlled stability on the Fuzz Probe.
Oh, really?
But it was
splutter?
Yeah, so it was no different. If you actually look at one, the top part is actually just the pedal,
right?
And then there's just an extension plate on the bottom, so it's same circuit. It's just one controller is controlled by like a conductive
right
plate, basically. But the Fuzz Factory is great. I love the Bliss Factory, it's the Chase Bliss one. Totally random, totally uncontrollable in some ways, but also just one of the best fuzz sounds ever, in my opinion. And a brand that you don't see enough anymore. They don't do much. Maybe they're sort of semi-retired. I don't know. They're obviously still selling in places. But yeah, branched out into a few things. But you just don't talk about them enough.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No. Okay. Well, my go. I want to talk about another little UK builder, Goliath Effects. Goliath Effects, I guess we've spoken about before on the podcasts, friends of the podcast. Looking forward to seeing them at Birmingham this year. I know, Matt, obviously you're going. JD and I are going up as well. I know JD wants to get one of the DO5s, which are their sort of DOD preamp style, his version of that. But it's like a broader frequency range, so ideal for bass. At the moment, I've got one of the Desolation distortion pedals, which is two unique. One's a drive, one's a fuzz. And you can, they've got two individual foot switches, but you can run them in parallel or stack them, which is great for creating sort of really crazy, weird drive sounds, but also just being able to control those a little bit more. But then, one of the very cool things he does, a Mark II silicon tone bender in kind of like a weird
correction, Joe. Chassis. It's the tome bender.
Tome, it is, yes. Yeah, you're right. It is the tome bender. But he always does limited edition finishes, which is really cool. When you click on any of the pedal options on his website, you get like a bunch of options that you can select from, different ways that things are painted. I know with the... with the DOD style preamp, you can get like this pink swell finish, which I think sold out really quickly, or you can get like a blackout version of that pedal with like pink spatter, like a really bold, like pop lipstick pink paint spatter across it. It's very cool. He always has super cool finishes. He does custom shop stuff where he wraps them in like comic book pages and then lacquers over that. So they're just such wonderful one-off pedals. He loves this crackled finish sort of thing, which I can take or leave, to be honest. I prefer the other stuff. It's a bit metal for me, that crackled finish, but nonetheless they are super cool. And I know that they were on the pedal was demoed on that pedal show as well, the tone bender, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's again a brand that we've not really talked about. Why I'm looking forward to going to the guitar show and actually seeing what else is out there and trying a few different things and understanding what people like and what people are asking for. Because, you know, I think the thing about fuzz is inherently it's a very, very simple circuit. So it allows you to put your own spin on it.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of really liked. And talking to these people about, you know, if they've done a tone bender, what have they done to you to make it their version, or what have they changed, or what transistors? Because, you know, if you've got a pedal that's eight components, every component is so vital to the final sound, and yeah, each component can vary so much as well. So it's really nice when, you know, some people look at it and go, oh, well, there's a million tone benders, so why bother? And it's like, well, they all sound different. And every builder will make their own thing to it. So, you know, I think it's a – and, of course – if you're going to start a pedal company and build stuff, you're going to start with what's easy and what you can maybe make more of. And, you know, you're going to be learning and basing things off what's out there and available. You're not going to start by going, I'm going to replicate an analog delay, because it's going to be super hard for you to do. It's going to be really hard for you to mass produce. It's going to be really hard for you to do something different. Whereas fuzz, small tweaks make a big change. So I think it's quite cool.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Okay, one more from you, Matt, before we wrap up this week's episode.
I'm going to go with, because I've put quite a few on here, Joe, but I'm going to go with one old school one, I think. I'm going to go with Death by Audio. And the reason I'm going to pick Death by Audio is because and I dug this out as I've been slowly unboxing stuff in the studio, which for people who are watching on the interwebs will look, my room looks like it's got nothing in it, but there is some stuff. It's just on the floor. When I went to my very first NAMM and I met the people, Oliver and the team at Death by Audio, they gave me, because I was with Yoshi and some of the Japanese team, they gave me a limited edition silver fuzz war with like custom circuitry in it. And I've sort of kept it in the box for ages, but every time I plug it in, it's such a good pedal.
Such a crazy pedal. There's so much, like, so much sustain. It's such a...
I think it's just, it kind of feels like unlike any other fuzz pedal. But for me, there's one thing. If you want to watch a very cool documentary about gear and a brand, the Earthquaker documentary, they do a thing called Show Us Your Junk, which is like going into different studios or pedal builders, and they did Death by Audio. And Oliver and the team, she's got this like crazy mad scientist thing about building gear, and he's in like this crazy like punk noise band type thing, and it's just like he just makes stuff that sounds like utter destruction. And I think they talk about it, and he's like, I'll have this crazy idea and I'll make this crazy sound, and then I need other people to like rein it in. And of course, that people have talked about the rooms, you know, that's obviously that sort of real high-end reverb pedal.
I got one.
You know, have you?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we did talk about it, didn't we? Talk about it before. I think one of their other new ones was like the Space Bender, which was that sort of crazy chorus modulator that did loads of weird sounds.
It's very cool, Space Bender.
But again, for me, one of the very early boutique brands I got into because of Andy, Pro Guitar Shop Andy, now of his own channel, Andy Demos. Very early on, demoing things like the Interstellar Overdriver, they did the Robot, but I remember the Supersonic Fuzz Gun was one pedal I never pulled the trigger on, but it's basically their kind of thing, similar to a Fuzz Factory that does all these crazy sounds. I think the Edge used one at one point.
Oh, really? Wow.
But I remember going into Denmark Street when I was a kid, and Vintage and Rare, which is now Notom, had an Apocalypse. And that is it's like five different fuzz waveforms with then a sweepable frequency EQ.
Oh, wow.
And I remember that. But at the time, it was £270. And I was like, that is a lot of money for a pedal at that point. Mm. But very, very cool. And again, they've been around for a really long time. For me, they've been around longer than, and certainly in my eye line, longer than JHS, longer than Earthquaker. You know, they've been there for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Well, they make super cool, super crazy pedals. They're always simple controls, huge knobs, often rocker switches. They look like they've been stencil painted in a shed. There's such a unique look and idea to Death by Audio, and just a brand that really kind of stood the test of time, I guess, for a brand that makes such weird things to keep producing stuff. And they're, you know, they're not cheap. They're expensive for what they're making. There are lots of brands making, you know, crazy fuzz pedals for less money. It just is testament to the quality that they're putting out.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2002, they've been going since.
There you go.
So there you go. Based in New York. But definitely, if you have heard of them, go back and check some of the earlier stuff. Check out the pedals that you probably haven't heard someone talk about in the last few years. Things like the Supersonic Fuzz Gun. And I think you'll find some nice surprises.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. Now, that pretty much brings us up to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Matt and I are going to head over onto Patreon. We're going to be talking about some of the news articles that have happened this week. I really want to talk about the new Warm Audio stuff, so we'll be doing that there. Before we go, I just want to thank our top tier, our $10 tier Patreon supporters for making all of this possible. Don't forget, dear listener, if you want to listen to us over on patreon.com/guitar nerds, you can do. You can go over there, sign up. Just $1 a month to get it ad-free, $5 to get access to the Patreon specials. Anyway, without further ado, thank you very much to Nicholas Strom, to Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Chris Franklin, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog grab it. There you go. There you go. Whoop, whoop. But yes, Matt and I are going to head over onto Patreon. Do join us there, dear listener. And we'll be back again next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.